This is Radio Superior 1943, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from 1943. This is a true story of our past, so step back with us to another time and hear this recreation of radio as it may have sounded in 1943. We bring you now to the KUWS radio studios at the Superior State Teachers College and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the lakes, station KUWS in Superior, Wisconsin. It's 6 o'clock Central Wartime, Monday, November 22nd, 1943. This is Jack McKenna reminding you in these war times that a careless word could mean a needless loss. Lou Martin has the war news. Rapid Ray Paulson's in with the sports, including all the news about that big Packer game. Harriet Feirig has a scoop about Captain Bong and a certain Superior State Teachers College co-ed. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Firestone Auto Supply and Service Stores in Superior and Duluth. Firestone has Christmas toys and gifts on sale, including a toy soldier set for just 98 cents. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. Our top story tonight, the Yanks are expanding beachheads on Macon and Tarawa in the Gilbert Islands. This is the first offensive in the Central Pacific, and the Marines are meeting heavy Jap resistance. We begin our World Shortwave Radio Roundup with veteran Pacific correspondent Daryl Berrigan on the battle lines in Tarawa.
The talk of Central Pacific Drive has flamed into fierce action here on the beaches of Tarawa. American Marines are fighting doggedly for a spearhead aimed at the heart of Japan's sea power. Control of Tarawa and the Gilbert Islands will expand the Allied presence in the Pacific that much closer to bombing range of Tokyo. The low sandy beaches of the Tarawa Atoll offers little natural protection for attacker and defender alike. This is a 16-island archipelago held by the British until the Japanese offensive in December of 1941. Tarawa is the largest at 22 miles long and the most heavily fortified. The resistance has been strong, not surprising, since Tarawa is the enemy's key air base in the Gilbert Islands, and Macon is the key port. These leathernecks are veterans of jungle fighting at Guadalcanal in the Solomon Island group. That was the first Allied offensive against Nippon. These men know the stakes are high here. Either the battle victories continue, or this war bogs down into a stalemate. Since this is the first Allied invasion north of the equator, this is a vital stepping stone for other Allied attacks. So far, Jap air raids have been few, but it appears the Allies own the skies over Tarawa. 1,600 miles to the west lay the heavily fortified Truk Island, a Japanese naval base as sprawling and powerful as the American Pearl Harbor base. It is expected that the Gilbert Islands will now attract the attention of the Truk fleet, with the fighting GIs. Somewhere on Tarawa, this is your correspondent, Daryl Berrigan, calling the 7th Fleet. Come in, William L. Worden.
This is correspondent William L. Worden reporting on board an aircraft carrier in the Central Pacific. This report has been delayed until now for reasons of national security. It can now be told that for the past 8 days, Army and Naval bombers have pummeled the Gilbert and Marshall Islands, softening up the beaches for Saturday's invasion of Tarawa and Macon. Beach defenses were reduced, runways ruined, barracks set afire, and oil dumps blown. The only retaliation from Japanese defenders was anti-aircraft fire. The only Jap planes were 10 and 1 bomber shattered on a Tarawa airstrip. The Army's 7th Air Force Liberator bombers scored the coup de grace with low-level attacks that could strafe individual trucks and ships while bombing. The targets were wide-ranging, along with Tarawa and Macon. Kwajalein, Malulap, and Juliet Islands were bombed. From my vantage point on a bombing run, I could see a bomb-pitted runway, smoking docks in the lagoon, and wrecked vehicles. There were few signs of Japanese, only a few repair crews scurrying between bombing runs. American Liberator crews threw everything they had against the Japs, including empty beer bottles. With the 7th Air Force in the Central Pacific, this is William L. Worden. Calling the Southwest Pacific. Come in, Allied headquarters in Australia.
Southwest Pacific headquarters here. Max Jordan reporting. This flash communique just handed me. The Jap airbase and supply depot in Gasmata has been bombed. American bombers dropped 138 tons of bombs on the new Britain base, the heaviest concentration at Gasmata of the war. This action is just one of several in progress, hitting Jap forces on several fronts. On New Guinea, the enemy gave ground reluctantly under pressure from Aussie troops, who are now using a new weapon in jungle warfare, the Matilda tank. The tank is rolling over trees and crushing resistance. These light tanks are squeezing resistance on New Guinea's Juan Peninsula. And General Douglas MacArthur is continuing his attack on the last major enemy base in the Solomons. The fighting at Bougainville has been raging since GIs landed at Empress Augusta Bay on November 1st. Allied forces have widened and consolidated their positions on Bougainville and hope for final victory in the Solomons soon. Max Jordan at Southwest Pacific Headquarters calling the Eastern Front. Come in, Henry Cassidy in Moscow.
This is Moscow calling. This is Henry Cassidy, Associated Press correspondent. German positions are being menaced by a new Russian offensive around the Dnieper Pass. More than 3,000 Nazi soldiers have been slain as the Red Army has overrun 8 bases and knocked out 60 German tanks. This thrust is added to difficulties by the Wehrmacht,
which is waging war to the west of Kiev in what may be the last Nazi offensive in the northern Ukraine. This Russian offensive is diverting Nazi forces from the battle to retake Kiev. A familiar scene was once again being reenacted. A large concentration of German tanks, troops, and planes is attacking a narrow sector while Soviet defenses absorb the blows in this battle of attrition. Soviet dispatches Sunday night called this battle serious, forcing the Red Army to give up the city of Zhytomyr, 60 miles west of Kiev. This is Henry Cassidy reporting from Moscow, calling Italy, calling Nolan Norgard with the British 8th Army.
This is Mobile Allied Headquarters, Nolan Norgard with the Italian campaign. Plunging forward 4 tortuous miles in the mountainous central region of Italy, General Sir Bernard Montgomery's 8th Army has seized 2 more towns overlooking the main road to Rome. The Montgomery advance has made, despite heavy rain and mud. This could be the move to position the 8th Army for a large winter offensive against stubbornly fortified Nazi positions in this rugged region. The new gains put the 8th Army just 2 miles from the upper Sandro River. It comes as a large number of Canadian reinforcements arrive for General Harold Alexander's ground forces. This is Norland Norgard with the British campaign reporting.
Berlin Radio is reporting that a son of President Roosevelt has been taken prisoner after an air raid on Germany. The White House and the War Department say that they have no information on this report. Polish officials in London are warning the Soviet Union to enter Poland as an ally, not as a conqueror. And the Red Army plunges closer to the Polish border, established there in 1921. Polish and British diplomats say that Moscow must reestablish relations with the Polish government in exile. If not, Russia will face stiff resistance from the Polish underground. Soviet Ambassador Konstantin Yomansky says they will only observe the borders established in 1939 after Germany and the Soviet Union invaded Poland. The Russians severed relations with the Polish government in exile after the Poles requested that the International Red Cross investigate claims that Soviets had massacred thousands of Polish officers near Smolensk. The remains of those officers were unearthed by Nazi troops last year. Firestone Store News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this word from our sponsor.
Thank you, Lou, and indeed I have, friends.
toys and gifts. Boy, it's coming up now for Christmas soon, folks. And there's something for everyone. For example, a free comic book. Just came in today. Now it's yours for nothing. Miss Patty Perkel, cute little baby doll with the goo-goo eyes. Those eyes move, my friends, for just $1.98. And the soldier set for 98 cents include 9 soldiers and a realistic fort made of plastic, also cowboy and Indian sets as well. And, of course, don't forget, Firestone has tires, lots and lots of America's favorite tires. That's Firestone Auto Supply and Service Stores, open till 9 p.m. on Thursday. Ogden Avenue, 1327, or dial 6791. Lou?
A Superior man has been killed in a hunting accident in the town of Parkland. 39-year-old Robert Branhan became the fourth hunter killed by gunfire in Wisconsin in the first half of the deer hunting season. Douglas County Sheriff Elton Eckroth says it appears a stray bullet felled Mr. Branhan. The coroner, Herbert Smith, will hold an inquest. The death occurred near the county asylum yesterday afternoon. Mr. Branhan was a switchman for the Great Northern Railroad. He leaves a wife, one son, and 5 daughters. State Senator Melvin Olson of South Wayne, Wisconsin, was shot and wounded while hunting yesterday. Senator Olson was hunting near Clam Lake and staying at a cabin in Glidden. He was taken to a Park Falls hospital with a bullet wound in the neck. Mrs. Orland Loomis of Mauston, Wisconsin, broke a bottle of champagne over the bow of a brand-new Victory ship last weekend. The widow of the governor-elect, who died a year ago just before taking office, christened the ship the SS Orland Loomis in Wilmington, California. Superior's Major League Baseball player turned serviceman is home for the holidays. Private Marjanovic, first baseman for the New York Giants until his induction to the Army, will be spending a few days with Mom and Dad, Mr. and Mrs. Charles Arnovich, at 1606 Hammond Avenue. The kiddies at the St. Joseph Orphanage in Superior will get a free day at the movies tomorrow. The Beacon manager, Roy McMinn, will host the matinee of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, with St. Joe's superintendent, the Reverend Leo Block, chaperoning. And finally, Jack, this story made me think of you and your culinary skills. Pensioners at the Barksdale TNT DuPont factory in Bayfield County got together yesterday for their annual Thanksgiving banquet. More than 75 men sat down to an unusually named courses prepared by Mrs. Odine Peterson. Each dish referred to places and parts at the Barksdale Works.
Reminded you of me because of the dynamite dishes?
Well, sort of. Like the boiler room turkey, Jellex dressing, mixed acid giblets gravy, black crimped peas, first aid salad, pack house pickles, shell house rolls, and pipe shop pie. Mr. M.C. Knig, he was the master of ceremonies.
Well, so M.C. was the master of ceremonies, eh? Well, he's probably waited his whole life to do that. Thanks, Lou Martin, the most explosive newsman in the North. Let's check the forecast for this Monday, November 22nd, 1943. Yes, we could get some wet snow tomorrow afternoon as temperatures get colder. Tonight's low will be 25 with a high tomorrow of 32 degrees. Gather round the wireless, folks. Let's kick off this Monday evening with the fine music of Edith Piaf and La Vie en Rose on the Martin and McKenna Show right here on station KUWS.
Des yeux qui font baisser les miens, un rire qui se perd sur sa bouche, voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est lui
des nuits d'amour à plus finir, un grand bonheur qui prend sa place, des ennuis, des chagrins s'effacent, heureux, heureux, sans mourir. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours, et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est toi pour moi, moi pour toi dans la vie. Tu me l'as dit, pas juré pour la vie.
The haunting Parisian sounds of Edith Piaf and La Fiancée Rose on station KUWS. That was recorded during the days of Free France, before Vichy France. The following message is approved by the War Production Board. Picture a child of war-torn Europe, left to die by retreating Nazi troops in the Ukraine or Italy. She's terror-stricken and wounded. The good news is an army nurse finds her and treats her with life-saving sulfa. There is a shortage of this medicine and other essentials for the war, including gunpowder. The common ingredient is glycerin, and demand for glycerin is high. But you, the housewife, can supply it, believe it or not, by saving every single drop of used cooking fat. Save it in a can, not glass. When the can's full, rush it to your butcher. It's desperately needed, ladies. You can make a difference on the home front. Now let's swing and sway with Sammy Kay and remember Pearl Harbor. On the Martin and McKenna Show.
History in every century records an act that lives forevermore. We'll recall as into line we fall the thing that happened on Hawaii shore. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we go to meet the foe. Let's remember Pearl Harbor as we did the Alamo. We will always remember how they died for liberty. Let's remember Pearl Harbor and go on to victory.
Victory.
rousing number from the Sammy Kaye Orchestra with Remember Pearl Harbor on station KUWS. Oh, hiya, Ray.
Hey, Jack, did you notice your sweater is inside out?
I wasn't going to tell him. I thought it best that way. You never know what's on the other side of that sweater. He might be doing this on purpose.
My pockets are on the wrong side.
And your tag is sticking out behind your neck, which is better than it sticking up your nose, I guess.
He's been itching his neck all evening.
I thought that was strange. My sweater's inside out. Well, my face is red.
It helps to dress with the light on, Jake.
A helpful style hint from Rapid Ray Paulson. He's the man with the good news about the Green Bay Packer game.
Oh, boy, do I ever. Good evening, fans of the sporting world. The Packers of Green Bay set the Dodgers of Brooklyn on their ear yesterday with the stellar play of Don Hutson. Nearly 19,000 fans watched as the fabulous fellow caught two touchdown passes, one for 79 yards, and kicked a 21-yard field goal while converting four extra point kicks. And this chap says he's going to retire after this season. The Alabama Flyer picked his way through the cloudless sky with an aerial circus at Brooklyn's expense, 31-7. Revising another one of his National Football League records, Hutson tucked eight passes under his arm and reeled off 237 yards to wipe out last year's record of 209 set against the Cleveland Rams. Montreal may play on the ice, but friends, they're on fire. The National League Hockey Club remains undefeated this season, defeating the Boston Bruins 13-4 in Montreal. A crowd of 12,000 fans saw Buddy O'Connor lead Montreal with three goals, while Flash Hollett made three for Boston. And, sport fans, it seems everyone's looking forward to the annual Army-Navy tilt on Saturday. The football warriors battle at West Point in the climax to a wartime season. In foxholes or on the high seas, soldiers and sailors will be awaiting the outcome. General Dwight Eisenhower in North Africa, General Joseph Stilwell in China, and Admiral Bull Halsey in the Pacific all played with the Army or Navy 11s. Navy is a slight favorite, but only a purveyor of piffle could sell the idea that there is an underdog in this game. This is Rapid Ray Paulson reminding you that everyone loves a good sport.
Purveyor of piffle?
What can I say? It's a gift.
This is for you, Ray. Your favorite. And it's on me. Rum and Coca-Cola by the Andrews Sisters on the Martin and McKenna Show.
If you ever go down Trinidad, they make you feel so very glad. Calypso sing and make up rhyme, guarantee you one real good fine time. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Oh, beat it, man, beat it. If a Yankee comes to Trinidad, they got the young girls all going mad. Young girls say they treat them nice, make Trinidad like paradise. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. Oh, you vex me, you vex me. Chicka chick carry to Mona's Isle, native girls all dance and smile. Helps old Chuss celebrate his leave, makes every day like New Year's Eve. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola, go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. It's a fact, man, it's a fact. In old Trinidad, I also fear, the situation is mighty queer. Like the Yankee girls, the native swoon, when she heard her bingo croon. Drinking rum and Coca-Cola,
go down Point Cumana. Both mother and daughter working for the Yankee dollar. Out on Manzanella Beach, G.I. romance with Native Peach. All night long make tropic love, the next day sit in hot sun and cool off, drinking rum and Coca-Cola. Go down Point Cumana, both mother and daughter, working for the Yankee dollar. It's a fact, Mom, it's a fact, rum and Coca-Cola. Working for the Yankee dollar.
And that was none other than the Andrews Sisters, no purveyors of piffle them, with rum and Coca-Cola on station KUWS. Okay, Lou, what's the big scoop?
We'll get that from our community editor, Harriet Farig, who's been covering Fighter Ace Captain Richard Vong's first leave. He's been busy, hasn't he, Harriet?
Everybody wants a piece of Captain Vong's time, I'm afraid. Poor guy. There's only so much of him to go around. But I will say he did have a good time hunting over the weekend. His hunting team filled all their tags and retired to their customary stop at the Gravel Pit Tavern in Poplar.
Oh, I had a few with the boys, eh?
Captain Vong is not a big drinker. He had a glass of sherry. But he's a big family man. He went to the Superior Airport and rented a Super Piper Cub. He then took everyone, two at a time, for a ride. It was first time flying for many of them. But here's the big news, everyone. It started Saturday night at the Superior Teachers College homecoming dance. It was a fun night, but there were differences that made it kind of sad. With so many away fighting, there was no football game this year. Aviation students from the college were on hand. That helped. But there was a real manpower shortage, forcing many girls to sit on the bleachers waiting for a dance.
That's terrible. Now, what's the scoop?
Well, Captain Vong was invited to crown the homecoming king. But King Paul Parker and Queen Violet Papillus found themselves waiting. Now, you have to picture this, boys.
We'll always be boys to Harriet.
I like being one of the boys.
I prefer she think of me as a gentleman.
Lewis, you're always my gentleman.
Yeah, but the scoop. How about the scoop?
Yes, Jack. Well, you have to picture this. The gym was jammed. You had to have special tickets to get in because people knew Captain Vong would be there. But alas, at the appointed time, he was nowhere to be found. Outgoing Queen Marjorie Vattendall was fit to be tied. Everything was held up for half an hour until gym door swung open and there he was with sisters Nelda and Jerry. It was so exciting. You should have heard everyone buzz. Poor Marge. She was so nervous. After Captain Vong crowned King Parker, it was her turn to crown the queen, but she couldn't. She froze right there in front of the crowd, an American hero. But like any hero, Dick Vong smiled, picked up the crown, and put it on Queen Violet's head.
That's quite a scoop, Harriet. Very interesting.
Louis, land sakes! I'm just getting to the good part.
Don't interrupt, Louis. And then, what happened?
Yeah, what did he do next?
Well, you can imagine the girls crowding around asking him to dance and making eyes at him. But the co-eds were disappointed because he didn't know how to dance. So he just sat along the sidelines and watched the kids jitterbug.
Oh, poor guy.
You'd think they'd teach him how to jitterbug in the service.
But it didn't end there for poor Marjorie Vattendall. She thought she completely blew her chances. After the dance, she went with a girlfriend to Bridgman's ice cream shop. And you'll never guess who was there sitting in the booth.
Captain Vong?
No way.
There he was, sitting with sisters Nelda and Jerry and pal Marvin Peterson. There in that crowded ice cream shop, America's number one Army ace saw Marge and motioned to her.
Oh, great.
Oh, what a guy. That's a real great guy.
And I've been told they not only had ice cream together, but they've got plans to take in a movie and go bowling. Marge told me he's the most fascinating man she's ever met. Isn't that peachy?
Well, good for him. That's a scoop, all right, Harriet.
Here's one for Captain Bong and Marjorie Vattendall. They are now officially an item, and you heard it here first. In spite of his lack of dancing prowess, we'll play Russ Morgan's new hit, Dance with a Dolly, on the Martin and McKenna Show.
As I was walking down the street, down the street, down the street, I met somebody who was mighty sweet, mighty fair to see. I asked her, would she like to have a talk, make some talk. All the fellas standing on the walk, wishing they were me. Mama, mama, let me dress up tonight, dress up tonight, dress up tonight. I've got a secret, gonna fess up tonight, gonna dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance with the dolly with the hole in her stocking, while her knees keep a knocking and her toes keep a rocking. Dance with the dolly with the hole in her stocking, dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance by the light of the moon. By the light of the moon. Mama, mama, put the cat out tonight, cat out tonight, cat out tonight. Worked all day, I'm gonna scat out tonight, and I won't be home until dawn. Gonna dance with the dolly with the hole in her stocking, while her knees keep a knocking and her toes keep a rocking. Dance with the dolly with the hole in her stocking, dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance by the light of the moon. Gonna dance by the light of the moon.
The good time music of Russ Morgan and his orchestra, and Dance with a Dolly, dedicated to Captain Bong and Marge Vattendall. Not to take anything away from our local hero, but I mean, really, all this fawning over him. When you think about it, what's he got that we haven't got?
A chest full of medals.
21 Jap planes shot down.
A good singing voice and a great family.
Doesn't drink or swear.
And he's excellent at baseball, hockey, and basketball.
Women love him.
Men love him.
Dogs love him.
All right, I'm convinced. If I was a woman, I think I'd date him.
Once again, going one step further than the rest of us.
Stay tuned now, folks, for our parade of stars on the radio tonight. Fred Waring is in, followed by Cavalcade of America, the voice of Firestone with Richard Crooks, and then Dr. IQ with Jim McLean. We'll be back same time, same old place on your radio dial, the good Lord willing, and we don't get a date with Captain Bong. For the whole gang here, this is Jack McKenna wishing you a very good night.
You have been listening to Radio Superior 1943, a weekly production presented by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Foreign correspondent Daryl Berrigan is played by Paul Guggenheimer. Other performances by Joel Anderson, all events reported on Radio Superior 1943, are actual accounts from the editions of the Superior Evening Telegram. Join us next week at this time for more Radio Superior 1943. This is your announcer, Tony Jasmine, speaking. Good night.